today in the headlines. Australians observed a minute of silence last night during a national day of mourning for the victims of last month's Bondi terror attack. At least two people are dead in multiple landslips in New Zealand's North Island, with rescue crews desperately searching for multiple missing people. One of the most prestigious prizes in Australian music is to be awarded tomorrow on the 24th in the final weekend of the Tamworth Country Music Festival. That and more coming up in the news. Australians observed a minute of silence last night on Thursday during a national day of mourning for the victims of last month's Bondi terror attack. Flags flew at half-mast and buildings and landmarks across the country were lit up, including the Sydney Opera House, the MCG in Melbourne, Story Bridge in Brisbane, Optus Stadium in Perth and Adelaide Town Hall. Rabbi Mendel Castell, CEO of charity Jewish House, spoke at a commemorative service in Sydney and honoured his late brother-in-law, Rabbi Eli Schlanger, who was killed in the mass shooting. He commended the community response of solidarity and support and called upon all Australians to find hope in this dark time.
If we go and we light the candles, we light the world, we light Australia, we bring back the values that we hold so tight. And like Hanukkah, that one light is not enough. Once we've lit one, we're going to light another one and another one and continue to grow. So let's hope together we can light up this country and bring back the sense of mateship, sense of friendship and care that we love so much about this country.
Police are investigating after three people were shot dead and another was seriously injured in a regional New South Wales town. About 4:40 p.m. yesterday, Thursday, emergency services were called to a shooting incident in the central west town of Lake Cardaligo, about 500 kilometres west of Sydney. Local police confirmed three people, two women and a man, have died, and another man has been taken to hospital in serious but stable condition. A crime scene has been established, and an investigation into the circumstances of the incident has commenced. Police have urged the public to avoid the area and has asked local residents to stay inside. At least two people are dead in multiple landslips in New Zealand's North Island, with rescue crews desperately searching for multiple missing people. Local media are reporting nine people are unaccounted for, including children, after Mount Mananui, an extinct volcano in Tauranga, partially collapsed onto a campsite where families were staying. Emergency crews report no signs of life beneath the debris as search and rescue dogs join the search. Canadian tourist Dion Sillick was having a massage when the mountain collapsed and his wife couldn't reach him.
So immediately she tried to ring me about four times and send a text, but my phone was on silent, as you can imagine, because you don't want to be disrupted. And so she was unaware of whether I was okay. So when I came out, she was crying. She had our two daughters there.
Earlier yesterday, the bodies of two people who were trapped inside a house during a landslip were found in Welcome Bay. New Zealand Prime Minister Christopher Luxon is urging residents in affected areas to obey local authority safety advice during the extreme conditions. Residents are waiting to be reunited with their flood-wrecked vehicles following a dramatic helicopter recovery mission in Victoria. More than a dozen cars and caravans have been retrieved from the waters along the state's surf coast after they were washed out to sea during flash floods. Authorities have hailed the operation a success, with Black Hawk helicopters able to retrieve all but one of the flood-wrecked vehicles at Wye River and Cumberland River. A single caravan remains unrecovered after breaking apart in heavy surf. State Emergency Service Chief Alastair Drayton says the vehicles have been relocated to dry land as police-led efforts to engage with their owners. Vandals have defaced two statues ahead of January 26, despite efforts to protect monuments against targeted attacks. Death to Australia was spray-painted on one of the two statues targeted between Wednesday night and Thursday morning at Melbourne's oldest park, Flagstaff Gardens. Police believe heavy machinery was used to tear down the Pioneer Monument, erected in 1871, before the badly damaged ruins were vandalised. The nearby Separation Memorial, erected in 1950 to commemorate the founding of the Victorian colony a century earlier, was similarly defaced. The attack occurred despite cameras and fences being installed to protect the statues and monuments in the lead up to January 26. New South Wales police are warning of an increased risk to motorists driving on roads this long weekend. Double demerit points and higher fines apply in the state for traffic offences from Friday until Monday, the 23rd until the 26th of January, with the public holiday falling on the Monday. Throughout the same period, school zone speed restrictions will remain in place. Last year, 356 people died in road traumas and fatalities across the state, with key factors reported as speeding, drink and drug driving, and fatigue.
By making sure that you follow the speed limits, not only over the double demerits points weekend, but rolling straight into that first term of school for the year, we're keeping our most vulnerable road users safe. The take-home message is simple. Plan your trip. Listen to your body, make safe choices.
One of the most prestigious prizes in Australian music is to be awarded tomorrow, Saturday 24th, in the final weekend of the Tamworth Country Music Festival. Musicians from around the country are in the New South Wales town, with buskers as usual taking centre stage. Child performers Michaela and Mick Curry, who call themselves the Curry Mob, told NITV while they hope to secure some votes ahead of the awards, busking is about fun.
Last year was what really kicked us off, because we were popular here last year busking and doing music, but really we just do it for fun.
The annual event is famous for kickstarting the careers of country stars, including singer-songwriter Keith Urban, who started as a busker in Tamworth. And now in sport, in tennis, local wildcard James Duckworth is out of the Australian Open after two-time defending champion Jannik Sinner beat him 6-1, 6-4, 6-2 at Melbourne Park last night. Meanwhile, on Margaret Court Arena, fellow champion Naomi Osaka needed three sets to beat Romanian Sorana Kirstia, 6-3, 4-6, 6-2. After the win, Osaka apologised for a tense exchange of words after Kirstia accused her of poor sportsmanship for yelling between serves. There were also wins for Taylor Fritz and Casper Rudd, both in straight sets. And now for today in the weather, Perth is cloudy at 19, Darwin is seeing showers with a possible storm at 27, Alice Springs is partly cloudy at 31, Brisbane is cloudy at 26, and Cairns is partly cloudy at 28. Sydney is cloudy at 25, and Canberra is sunny at 16. Melbourne is sunny at 17, Hobart is cloudy at 15, and Adelaide is sunny at 23. And that wraps up the latest in news, sport and weather. You're listening to NITV Radio. Later on the show, a lecturer, researcher and NATSIA award winner, Jacali Felicitas Romanus, has a conversation with NITV Radio's Shaka Pakova. And My Keisha, a young Black Pacifica singer, layers harmonies, R&B, soul and pop melodies in her music. And she has a conversation with Luana Grant as she is going to be performing this weekend at the Black powerhouse. But first, racial profiling is a topic at hand as recent reports reveal more about warrantless arrests, police search powers, and the responses to these findings down in Victoria. Have a listen to this. A new study reveals that communities with multiracial backgrounds are exposed to warrantless searches up to 3.5 times more than communities in white majority areas. According to the analysis of Victoria Police's use of extraordinary search power, this happens when areas of white majority communities have higher crime rates. NITV Radio's Nari Pakai reports. If you live in Victoria, you may have heard of the term designated area. It's where police can search anyone without a warrant or reasonable suspicion, and it's often declared for police to manage mass protests. Last November, Victoria Police declared Melbourne CBD and surrounds as a designated area for 6 months in response to weapon offences. A legal challenge was then launched by activists, including organisers of an Invasion Day rally on Australia Day, as they argue it breached Victorian Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities. Police later revoked the 6-month-long declaration, and the federal court will hand down findings of the legal challenge later in January. A new study has shed light on a bigger issue of these warrantless searches. Ilo Diaz is a researcher from Centre Against Racial Profiling in Melbourne. His team has looked into the data from 2019 to 2024 across over 200 designated areas declared by Victoria Police.
While designated areas are supposed to be a tool that Victoria Police use to supposedly keep everyone safe, what's happening is that it's racialised communities that are living in suspended rights areas, and they're the ones that are most impacted on these powers.
Mr Diaz says areas like Dandenong and Brimbank, where residents are from multiracial backgrounds, are often targeted for warrantless search when they are part of the designated areas.
This means that there's a disproportionate impact. So, for example, the 10% most racialised communities versus the 10% least racialized, that's the whitest, they are impacted 3.5 times more than the lowest racialized communities.
The Victorian government already banned racial profiling in 2015, but more than a decade later, the state needs to make more progress on this, according to Gemma Carfarella, a lawyer from Liberty Victoria.
It's a very significant human rights issue. Liberty Victoria's research shows that what happens when police use these powers is that 99% of the time they will be used against a person who has done absolutely nothing wrong. So there's a hit rate of just 1% when these laws are used. The reason that that's such a significant problem is that it's a really significant impact on people's right to privacy and their right to just walk around the streets without unwarranted intrusion into their lives.
The Victorian government issued a statement in response to the findings.
Victorians deserve to be safe in public, and there's no excuse for anyone to be carrying weapons around. That's why we've given police the powers to get weapons off our streets quickly and more often. Any allegations against members are taken seriously and investigated, and complaints about police conduct can be made to the independent, broad-based Anti-Corruption Commission.
But Ms. Carfarella says the Victorian government needs to rethink using laws of designated areas for public safety.
So what this study shows is that these powers are being used to entrench disadvantage and to target racialised and low socioeconomic communities. We continue to say that the state government needs to rethink these laws and to go back to the drawing board and find solutions that actually work to address the drivers of crime rather than to unfairly punish people of colour and people who are socioeconomically disadvantaged.
That story by Asha Abdi and Wing Kweng for SBS News, produced by Nari Pakai for NITV Radio. The The Black Power House will have live music, DJs, dance, panel discussions, weaving workshops, interactive art installations, and if you can believe it, even more, including New York City to Sydney R&B singer Mykesha. Mykesha speaks to NITV Radio's Luana Grant about her upcoming appearance at the Black Power House. It's taking place on January 26 at Manning House, Sydney University. Joining the lineup with artists like Ziggy Ramo, hip-hop rap duo Birds and Fred Leone, and Barker. Have a listen to this conversation with Mykesha.
Thank you so much for joining me on NITV Radio today. It's so great to have you on and to have a chat.
Thanks, sis. I'm so excited to have a little yarn.
So you're performing at Black Power House on Gadigal Country this Survival Day on Monday. Before we get into the event, what does Survival Day mean to you personally?
For me, Survival Day has always been a day, one, to remember our history, our resilience, even honestly, our the beauty of survival of blackfellas in Australia, or so-called Australia. And while it is a day of mourning, I've grown up in a community and a family that has always used that day to celebrate our resilience and ultimately just get together with community, get together with mob and allies, and celebrate the beauty of Black Australia.
Yeah, I think, like, you're so right. It's also as hard of a day as it is for us as mob, it's also really important that we do, you know, come together and celebrate the fact that we are strong and, you know, we're surviving. And yeah, it's a day that we can also just be together as well and, like, lean on each other for support if we need. And it can be, totally, like, a big day of emotion for all of us as mob. But how do you navigate the day as an artist and as a proud First Nations woman?
I feel like as an artist, a songwriter, performer, I have a responsibility to speak truth. And so I find Survival Day, I kind of need to put on my armor a little bit, or my war paint, if I can use those words. Mm. And it's a day where I mean, in my career and in my personal life, just as a Black woman, I'm very outspoken about these issues. But I think particularly on Jan 26, I have the privilege of having platforms to share my music and share stories with people who maybe, I don't know, haven't learnt about the true history of Australia and its violent colonization. And so, I don't know, I guess Monday I kind of just lean into that staunch energy of supporting mob, speaking truth, and just, yeah, being unapologetic about that.
And how do you think music helps you express, you know, survival and strength and truth, especially on a day like Jan 26?
What I love about music as a medium the most is the fact that you can package a really hard-hitting, uncomfortable truth in a really beautiful kind of present, I don't know, like bow or song, or I don't know how to explain it, but you can speak truth and uncomfortable truths in a way that sounds beautiful. And I think that's really effective when it comes to reaching people who maybe don't want to confront the reality of our history as a nation.
And Black Powerhouse, the event, really flips Jan 26 into a day of Black power, pride, and positivity. What does being part of a lineup like that mean to you?
It's seriously, like, I think this is the second Black Powerhouse I've done, and I still pinch myself that I have the privilege of, you know, not only just to be present and to witness that Black excellence, but to be able to also contribute to that movement and that energy of that day. Like, it's such an insane lineup. Barker, 3%, Ziggy Ramo. There's so much talent, so much love. I don't know. I feel honored.
And what does it mean to be able to share a stage with, you know, all those performers that you just mentioned, like such amazing performers? And I've been to one of the Black Power Houses a few years ago, and it was just like, it went off. It was so amazing. And I just felt like the strength from everybody, and all the performers were amazing. What does it mean to you to be a part of that amazing lineup?
It makes me feel so proud that my community would, you know, give me that platform. It also like lights a fire in me because I'm, you know, up there alongside some of the, you know, greatest, in my opinion, Black artists and rappers. It really makes me have to pick up my game. So it's, I get excited when I have gigs like these because I can really just go all out, experiment creatively, and, you know, try things new within the safety of the community.
And a few years ago, you featured on a song with Nookie, We Are Warriors, which is like such a amazing, powerful song. Can you tell us a little bit about that collaboration? And will you guys be performing that on Monday?
Honestly, the way that Nooks rolls, who knows? He'll yeah. probably call me up on stage as the track is starting and be like, here, sis, jump up. So probably, I hope so. I love this song so much, and it has a really beautiful story. So the time that we recorded this song, it was a few years ago now. We're kind of coming out of COVID. Nookie is Gadigal based, and I was living in Berlin at the time. And one morning, I just got a DM from him, and he was like, "Hey sis, can you jump on this track for me?" And I was like, "Hello, absolutely!" I got access to a studio, recorded the vocals by myself, and sent them through to him. And then, literally within a few weeks, it was out in the world. So,
wow,
kind of a beautiful. So cool. I don't know, just fun to see, like, you know, the places that Mob go and how we still kind of always find our way back to each other.
Yeah, definitely. And such a interesting story too. Like, I didn't even know that, you know, you were like so far away and still, you know, being able to connect and be on his track. And it's an totally awesome song. I love that song so much. And Black Powerhouse isn't just about the music. There's also black markets, weaving workshops, lots of stalls. Why do you think it's so important to have a space like that, as well as, you know, all of the music for community?
I think, you know, First Nations culture has so many, you know, beautiful expressions and art forms, and everyone, I think, has their own kind of thing that would speak to them. For some people, that's music. For other people, that's visual art. For others, it's just being in community. And I think what I always want to emphasize about Invasion Day or Survival Day is that it's like the one day, one that we blatantly experience a lot of racism from the colony. And it's also one of the only days that we get to create spaces for ourselves to exist as black fellas in community, in a way that's loud, you know. And I think for any allies listening, Jan 26 is an opportunity to learn, to be in community, to buy black, to support local Indigenous artists, to stream Indigenous music, all of those kinds of things.
And finally, before we wrap up, what do you hope that, you know, Mob, and especially like our young ones, take away from seeing culture and creativity come together like this, and for all of us to be standing together strong as Mob?
Yeah, I would just say for any young black fellas, just continue to be unapologetically yourself in whatever way that is. I hope that the music, the stories, the art that us, I don't even know if I can say I'm older, I'm 25, but
that is not old. Sure,
like, it's not old, but for Gen Alpha, they're probably yep. like, I'm like, what do you call it? Bordering auntie territory. I would just say, like, just be confident, lean on your community for support, express yourself unapologetically, and just take the risk, because more often than not, there's always Mob and community there to lift you up and support.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much, sis, for coming on NITB Radio, and all the best with your performance, and, you know, just stay strong on that day. It can be really hard, like all Mob listening, it is a really hard day, but it's also a great day for us to come together as mob and lean on each other for all the support that we need, and to also remember that, you know, we are stronger together as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, sis. It's always so nice to have a yarn.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Up next, a conversation with Jacali Felicitas Romanus. She's reflecting on her past year as a professional life as a lecturer, researcher, and a NATSIA award winner. She's a proud Pitta Pitta woman and has completed a PhD and landed her dream job teaching at university. She has a conversation with NITV Radio's Sharka Pakova. Have a listen to this conversation.
We are now joined by a Pitta Pitta woman, artist and university teacher, Jacali Felicitas Romanis. Hello, Jacali, and thank you so much for taking your time today to talk to us.
Hi, no, thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Let's start. If you can please tell us who your people are and where do you come from?
So I'm a proud Pitta Pitta woman, but born and raised on Wadawurrung country on the Surf Coast. I'm currently living on Wurundjeri country in Melbourne. So sort of always been based down on Kulin land in Victoria, but my mob are from central Queensland, central West Queensland. I'm speaking to you from Wadawurrung country down in Janjuk, down on the Surf Coast.
Thank you so much. Now, I know this one is a difficult one because we are radio, but, and you are visual artists, you're mainly focusing on photography, but how could you please describe your work?
My work is very much intertwined with who I am as a Pitta Pitta woman. It explores a lot of different themes, kind of cultural identity, connection to country, connection to ancestors through the photograph, as you mentioned, but I suppose visually the work often has a kind of layered feeling to it. A lot of the time I will place more than one image on top of the other, and it'll create this kind of blended layering effect, and that kind of comes through in both the still images and the moving image works as well.
Mm-hmm. So what is the moving image work?
So the moving image works, they're short video works, and the ones I've made so far have a kind of poetic voiceover. And so another facet of my arts practice is actually spoken word. And so it's interesting, I sort of brought that in because, you know, the visual is really great and I love being a visual artist, but I also think language is so important and kind of conveys another layer or aspect to the stories that I'm trying to share through my work.
Mm-hmm. And one of the recent works is Disconnected to Country. Can you please tell us more about this one?
Yeah, so this body of work I started in 2019, and it's kind of what I would say is a lifelong project, but really Disconnected to Country as a sort of series or body of work explores, you know, institutional archives. It explores photographs of country and ancestors, and kind of is a way for me to connect to both country and ancestors through my arts practice.
Mm-hmm. You spoke about the crisis of archive, this was the title, at a conference as well. So can you tell us a little bit more about this one, please?
Sure. Yeah, so I spoke at a symposium a few months ago now alongside two of my colleagues and dear friends, Dr. Kirsten Little-Garner and Dr. Peter Clancy, who are both Indigenous photographers themselves. Kirsten is Māori and Peter is a proud Yorta Yorta woman. We all kind of work with archival images, and really what I mean by archival images for me personally is that they're photographs that sit within a kind of institution. So I have photographs of my great-grandparents within the Tyndale Genealogical Collection that sits within the South Australian Museum. And they kind of, the archive is kind of this space where these images are all held and they kind of sit together in this particular room. And so I think photographers often are thinking about the archive and how we work with archives, particularly Indigenous people who for centuries have been at the hands of colonial research, and really a lot of our knowledges exist and come out of these archival spaces.
Mm. How do you feel about the archival spaces? Is it like a neutral feeling or negative, positive?
Archives are really interesting. They're sort of spaces of tension where the kind of a particular period in time is then sort of seen through a different lens in the present day. So for me, like, you know, I'm very lucky to have spent time within the Tyndale Genealogical Collection at the South Australian Museum. And I think, you know, I can recognise that Tyndale's research was sort of coming from this particular lens. But a lot of the time it is quite confronting to be in these spaces, you know. They have a kind of energy to them and really highlight what the kind of perspective of research was towards Indigenous people at that time. I should probably add as well and explain who Tyndale is. He was an Australian anthropologist that travelled through a series of communities, you know, Indigenous communities in the 30s and 40s, and he did a lot of family genealogical tree work, but also made a lot of photographs of Indigenous people that really kind of follow this particular visual language. The only way that I can kind of describe the photographs is they look like headshots, essentially, like mugshots. There's a sort of forward-facing portrait and a side-facing portrait. And so, yeah, both of my great-grandparents on my mum's side of my family have been documented within this archive. And so I've been working with those photographs from 1938, which is when they were made. Yeah.
Mm. How do you feel about, like, do we archive photographs these days? Would we have archives like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting thought, like how do we kind of archive differently now? And there's a lot of conversations about digital archives and data sovereignty, a lot of work in that space happening at the moment, and how, you know, Indigenous folks can have control over their knowledges and agency over their, you know, sacred, important stories. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the time archives now really need artists in a way, and like people actually activating those archives and activating the, you know, cultural materials or the photographs or the documents, whatever it might be, through making and through, you know, spending time with them.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about these new opportunities. I know you also are a teacher at university. Is that something you're talking about with your students, or is there a completely different message?
Oh, no, for sure. I think inevitably, I mean, I'm very lucky to be teaching at Monash, but I think it's really important to be educating the next kind of generation of people coming through about the power of archives and institutional archives. I teach within a unit that is specifically about Indigenous creative practices, ways of doing, being and knowing. And I'm very lucky to be a part of a team of Indigenous teachers who are really committed to bringing young people through and educating young folks about Indigenous creative practices and how we've been making for millennia and how that is still important to recognise today.
Mm-hmm. So not just photography, but also other practices?
Yeah, I mean, my kind of sort of expertise, I suppose you could say, is photography, and kind of I do teach a couple of other subjects that are specific to photography. But within the Indigenous unit, we sort of touch on a lot of other artists and their practices. And yeah, I guess highlighting that link between cultural practice, creative practice, and continuing systems of knowledge for generations to come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're very busy, and you also were very busy in last year, because not only you created your art, you had exhibitions, both solo and group exhibitions, and you're teaching at university. You also won several prizes and you spoke at conferences. Looking back, how was that year for you?
2025 was a wild ride, I think. You know, I finished my PhD in sort of February of last year. And then, yeah, sort of jumped into teaching. I feel, if anything, just very grateful to be having the opportunities that I have. I really always wanted to be a teacher at a university and to kind of finish my PhD and then hop into a job at Monash. I mean, it's like really, I just feel very lucky to be doing this and also to be a practicing artist at the same time. It's a really wonderful, special thing to be able to do.
And last but not least, you collected awards. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, so I mean, I collected one award last year. but I was the winner of the multimedia category at the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Art Awards. So the Telstra Natsia, as they are known as. Yeah, it was an incredibly special award to, you know, be recognised in, and a complete honour to be among such incredible Indigenous, you know, makers as well. It's a really beautiful time to be on Larrakia country too, in Darwin.
Congratulations, Jakali. And my last question, what are your plans for this year?
I'll be teaching again this year, which will be great. I've got a show coming up at the National Gallery of Victoria in March, so I'm sort of steadfast getting organised for that, but I'm trying to take it a bit slower if I can.
Is it something you need for your art practice to sort of step back and reflect, or do you need the pressure and the drive
to create? I quite enjoy a little bit of pressure, but there does come a time when you need to recharge. And I mean, creativity, it's not something that's sort of just constantly going all the time. Like, sometimes you need space to think about it and sit with things. So yeah, I'm hoping that this year I will take a little bit of time to just make some new things and have that be something I'm doing outside of sort of an exhibition's headspace.
Good luck with that, and thank you so much for taking your time to talk to us on NITV Radio today, Jakali.
Thanks so much, Saka.